Hi, Jay.
How are you doing, Jay? How's everything going?
Everything is going well so far. Thank you. And you?
So far, I am staying away from all the ills that society can bring me. Well, not all, but, you know, some you don't have a choice. They follow you.
Yeah. Well, the ills are there. It's true. One ill that I'd like to talk about is remote learning.
Okay.
So let me say that. Why is it ill? If you ask practicing medics or social workers about basically what remote learning is, it's an isolated environment in which you learn. You don't socialize with others. And these people are on the front lines. They're witnessing that isolation leads to increase in mental illness, including depression. They see drug abuse. They see domestic violence. These are some of the major problems with remote learning. Now, these are worthwhile topics to talk about, but I would like to focus on things that are less, I would say, mentioned in somewhere in the press, even or in conversations. For example, exam cheating. What happens is if you're a student and you're in a classroom, cheating is risky because your teacher is supervising a test and you can be easily spotted, sometimes not so easily, but most of the time the teacher would spot you cheating and just fail you. So there's a lot of risk with cheating.
Now, if you're caught.
Yes. If you're caught.
Yes.
If you are doing remote exam taking, then it's harder for the teacher to see if you're cheating or not. There have been some countermeasures that different learning institutions take with regard to that. But that varies. There's no common standard. So it varies from college to college, from teacher to teacher, from school to school, professor to professor. I've talked to some college students, and I heard that there is software that monitors your eye movement. And so it can tell if you're trying to cheat in an exam. It's not a foolproof method, but it's one of the methods using technology to detect cheating. Now, in general, my attitude toward cheating was always that I have never cheated in my life in school and college. Always done my own work diligently, and I believe that other people should do the same. Lately, I have had a slight change in the attitude. I found some cases when, believe it or not, cheating could be appropriate. For example.
Well, I'd like to hear this.
Yes. I've heard stories that in some colleges, you have a professor that you can't understand what he's saying because of his very heavy accent. In addition to that, when he gives you an exam, it's not on what was taught in class. Not at all. In that case, this exam is just very unfair in itself. In those cases, yes, I do support cheating because it's just a very, very unfair way to test people. And so if you are one of these students, and this is exactly your case, then yes, you can write to me at j3@unscripted.com on the contact page. And again, this is my own opinion, not the other J's, just my own.
In other words, the comments expressed by the guest do not represent those of the hosts.
something like that.
Something like that, right?
Yes, but I can give you some ideas on how you could basically cheat on the exam, but only if you are stuck in this unfair situation. All right, Jay, I know that you are also teaching some courses, yes. And you also experience with remote learning for children in school. So what what have you seen that is interesting that you can share with us? That something that doesn't work or something that works? Let us know, please.
Okay. Well, that is correct. I do teach. I'm an adjunct with City University in New York City, and have a lot of experience teaching, I guess, various courses. However, because of the current circumstances with COVID, all teaching has pretty much moved to the online platform. And I guess specifically regarding the whole cheating thing, one of my policies is that I never give exams on material that I haven't covered, because as you mentioned, it's just not fair. It's just not, I don't think it's ethical. It doesn't prove anything. It doesn't contribute to the understanding of the students of any particular materials. To me, especially when you have different types of learners we have in the classroom today, something like that, I just feel like is inappropriate. However, that being said, I don't condone cheating. I couldn't possibly condone cheating because of my position, obviously, you know, in those circumstances. So if I were on the other side of the table, on the other side of the podium as a student, and I was given an exam on material that I didn't cover. Now, I hear that a lot, too. I hear that quite a bit. Just people I know who are taking different courses and studying for different things. A lot of times they're tested on material that they haven't covered. My feeling is that if that occurs as a student, it's your responsibility, or in terms of being proactive or assertive, to bring it to the attention of the professors. You know, you say, listen, professor, respectfully, you've given us a quiz on material or a test on material that we haven't covered, and I don't think it's fair, and you let the chips fall where they may. I find that in the minds of a lot of students, they feel the professor is unassailable. Whatever they do, that's just it. That's the law. However, being in that position, we're human. At least the way I perceive it, the way I approach it, is that if a student comes with something that is reasonable, I'm open, or I'm open to hear what that student's presenting to me. I'm open to it. But again, you know, because it's my policy that I don't test on material that I haven't covered, would be transparent. In other words, I have no problem with that. You're going to say something, Jake?
Yeah, I was going to say that. This is one professor's opinion.
One.
And, right, right.
That's correct.
And this solution might work. Also, not always. What I've heard some cases when something like this does not work. I even heard of cases, students going to the dean, and the dean saying, hey, sorry, there's nothing we can do. This professor, for whatever reason, he has tenure or some other reason. And there's nothing we can do, and the students just leave with no resolution.
Right. Well, that's why I say in the minds of a lot of students, they feel that the professor is unassailable. And as you're stating, that is the case in a lot of situations. The professor, his word is the law, and that's just what it is. I don't think that that's fair. I feel that you should be able to be flexible. You should be able, flexibility should be part of your MO.
Listen, Jay, we need more professors like you.
You know what? I'll take that as a compliment. Whether I feel that way or not is another matter.
Okay. All right. Well, let me jump to another issue that I've noticed. There was an article the other day in El Diario NY, and they talked about this manicurist, this Mexican woman. She's been a manicurist for 15 years, and then because of COVID, she's been out of work for about 4 months. And because of remote learning, they require that her child has internet access, of course. And she ran out of money. She cannot pay her bills, and it's a real problem for her. So there is an internet cost for poor people, people who are on the fringe. There are poor people out there who've been out of work, didn't have much in savings, and they just can't afford remote learning. The government is not helping in that sense. So that's something that I have not seen in my readings. I have not that seen covered in the news. Have you?
Well, I can't say I've seen it covered in the news, but I can tell you that part of City University's policy now is that we have to take into consideration the exact circumstances you mentioned, that there are people who attend a school from different economic strata, and they may not necessarily have either continuous access or access at all to the internet. And we have to be aware of that. As a matter of fact, I get emails, I think you and I were discussing today, about a student of mine who approached me, and they're having some really serious issues in terms of issues that would affect
financial issues. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Issues that would affect the ability to have a consistent internet access. And, you know, to the student's credit, they reached out to me and they told me what the circumstances were. Maybe I'm just that type of person, but it is a fact that CUNY wants us to be cognizant of these circumstances. Like, we have to know, we have to be aware, and find ways to assist that student to be able to take the courses, take the exams, keep up with the class, even though they don't have consistent internet access. So I haven't seen it covered in the news, but it is part of policy that we have to be aware of it and make accommodations for that.
So how would you, Jay, how would you accommodate that person for learning if that person has no internet?
Okay, so now if the person has absolutely no internet at all, obviously there's, or I would say, very little that you can do, especially if the courses are taught online. However, if they do have some sporadic access to internet, internet access,
right,
then what you can do is you reach out to that person. You can establish communication. This is what I've done. You establish lines of communication with that person via email. So email, it's not real time access. It's when the person is able to check the email. And so what you do, you establish a set of protocol for you and that student. You say, check your email at this particular time every day, and I will upload different projects for you, different class projects that we're working on. You work on that project, and you get it back to me at a specific time. Now, you have synchronous and asynchronous teaching. Asynchronous is where the interaction between the student and the teacher is not in real time. Most courses are taught that way. Online courses are taught that way, where assignments are simply posted, you respond to the assignments, you reply, and there's no real-time access. Synchronous is where it's real-time. So with Zoom and other conference apps, we have the ability to have real-time access to hold live classes, class sessions. What you do is you go into the asynchronous mode, where you say to the student, "No, I'm gonna email you the various projects and assignments, and you get them back to me via email, right, by X or whatever date you determine." And that's how I do it. And I see that as something that's very doable, mm-hmm. and it works out.
Well, I'm glad that there are ways to accommodate this situation. It's not a perfect way, of course, because like you said, if someone has no internet at all, then there's nothing you can do. You can't have the person come to college and read, take exams, or do anything like that, can you?
That would depend on that. To me, that sounds like more of a policy decision at the administrative level, whether or not they're going to, especially with the current circumstances where you have entire facilities closed because of the quarantine, mm-hmm. because of COVID. Yeah. So imagine opening a school because a student or some students don't have internet access, then, logically, you may as well just hold a class.
Right.
But we can't do that. We can't do that.
Right.
So I'm not sure if that would work. I'm not sure.
Can you provide some anecdotes that you've seen for regular school, not college, but for school kids, that what you've seen that didn't work well?
Of course. I'll say this, right? There are students who, children that have to deal with this online paradigm. I think that what I've seen is that there is the attention span aspect of this whole thing. I've seen students who could not stay focused on what the teacher is saying, because essentially what's happening is this, the teacher is lecturing to these third and fourth graders. Their attention spans are not great to begin with, and now you have them in their own home environments with all the distractions that are at home, and asking them to sit in front of the computer and listen to someone talk for an hour or two. In school environment is a lot different. You have the desk, you have the chair, there are other students, everyone's like-minded. We don't know necessarily what the environment is like where these students are. They may be in a place where they can't.
Well, you could have other kids.
They have no privacy. They have no privacy.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. You could have their siblings playing right next to them.
Exactly. Yeah. Or maybe grandpa is watching TV and he doesn't care. His show is on television. You just have to work it out, figure it out somehow. So, you have all these different circumstances that kids have to deal with in order to learn in this new online paradigm, and it's a mixed bag. It really depends on the home environment, depends on what the kid's circumstances are. So I would say that this may work better for kids from either a middle class or maybe even upper middle class environment, because they may have a house with an office where they can go and isolate and just be alone. They may have a stay-at-home parent that can help facilitate their access, because that's a whole nother thing. I've seen some of the quote, I'm going to call it a conduit. Some of the conduits for the kids to navigate to get this online learning. And I'll tell you, you and I both, we are IT people, right, at our cores. And I've had some issues trying to figure out how to get access to this content. And can you imagine a 9-year-old or an 8-year-old whose parent is not home to begin with, trying to access this material? It's
a nightmare. What exactly are you talking about? What is it that they couldn't do?
Okay, so the courses are given through, in a lot of cases, through Google Classroom. There's email that the students have to access. The emails will give you different links. Sometimes you get four or five different emails saying different things, and embedded in that email, there's a link that the student has to click on. Now, the student has to read five emails to figure out where this link is. Then they click on a link, and the link takes them to another website, possibly Zoom or whatever, wherever the access is facilitated, the platform. And now they have to navigate that whole thing. The thing is that there's no easy way for them to access the classroom sessions. There's not an easy way for them to do
it. So it's not like children go to open your textbook on page 101 and look at the top picture at the top. It's not like that.
You know what? I love that. That is it entirely. It's more like, we'll click on this link and it takes you to this IP address, and IP address takes you down to, you know, this server, and in the server there is an application, and you click on that link, and literally that's what it's like.
And yeah, so I can see how it could be difficult for little kids. Yes.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and especially kids. Now, mind you, you're talking about kids from the age of 6 years old on. So let's just look at the six-year-olds or the seven-year-olds. Yes, they talk about how kids today are computer savvy. They are computer savvy in terms of whatever video game or application they're using. But to navigate different links and put all these different applications together to facilitate some type of learning environment, and on top of that, you're talking about learning, you're talking about school. First of all, the kid's not even interested, you know, most kids are not interested in going to school. That's just the reality. If you have children, you know what I mean. They don't want to go to school. And to force them to now go through these different machinations in order to get to the material, they don't want to do it. And I can't blame them. I don't blame them. They didn't ask for this. But this is what they have. Yeah, it's a very wild world. The Wild West, pretty much. And my feeling is that it's not sustainable. I don't see it as sustainable at all. Yeah. Some kids are walking away on a daily basis, not acquiring any knowledge at all. This is what's happening. Even if they do have the ability to somehow sit in front of the computer, a lot of them are not absorbing information.
Well, I was going to say that in the defense of the school system, let's say.
There's no defense, man. I'm kidding.
I can say that it was quite sudden, this this COVID thing, and the schools had to respond the best way they knew, and so they were just caught totally unprepared. There was no plan. And that's why you're seeing these types of little bugs in the system, right?
Well, this was, let's see, last April, May, right? Or March, April, when all of this pretty much happened. Yes, I could give the school systems a pass, because you're right. It was just sort of like thrust on them. And, you know, however, we have had June, July, August, with the money that we put into these different school systems, they could not afford different consultants to help them to coordinate plans and also give them a solid plan to implement this. I have to say that that's not an argument that I could use on their behalf. I think they've had time. That they knew that what was coming, at least as far as the fall is concerned. And I think they're doing the best they can, but at the same time, it's just not perfect. But I wouldn't defend them in that sense.
Yeah. All right, Jay. Think we have to wind up our conversation today.
Well, this has been a personal discussion, because I'm directly involved in this whole paradigm. So yes, it was a I think it was a great discussion, something that needs to be spoken about, which I'm sure it already is, but maybe not outside of academic circles, right? So here we bring this to the masses, to our people, and hopefully they are able to get something from this.
Cool.
All right.
Bye, Jay.
All right, Jay, until next time.